Chapter 2. Two Captains. About 2 miles north of the city, a wide blue banner stretched between two tall poles rippled in the wind, proclaiming Valen Luka's grand traveling show and magnificent display of marvels and wonders, in brilliant red letters large enough to be read from the road, perhaps 100 paces east. For those unable to read, it at least indicated the location of something out of the ordinary. This was the largest traveling show in the world, so the banner claimed. Luka claimed a great many things, but Matt thought he must be telling the truth about that. The show's canvas wall, 10 feet high and tightly pegged at the bottom, enclosed as much ground as a good-sized village. The people streaming by looked toward the banner curiously, but the farmers and merchants had their work ahead of them, and the settlers their future, and none turned aside. Thick ropes fastened to posts set in the ground were meant to herd crowds to the wide arched entrance, just behind the banner, but there was no one waiting to get in, not at this hour. Of late, few came at any hour. The fall of Ebudar had brought only a slight drop in attendance, once people realized the city would not be looted, and they did not have to flee for their lives. But with the return, all those ships and settlers, nearly everyone decided to hold on to their coin against more pressing needs. Two bulky men, huddling in cloaks that might have come from a rag bag, were on duty beneath the banner to keep out anyone who wanted to peek around without paying. But even those were in short supply nowadays. The pair, one with a crooked nose above a thick mustache and the other missing an eye, were squatting on the dirt tossing dice. Surprisingly, Petra Anhill, the show's strong man, stood watching the two horse handlers play, arms larger than most men's legs, folded across his chest. He was shorter than Matt, but at least twice as wide, his shoulders straining the heavy blue coat his wife made him wear against the cold. Petra seemed engrossed in the dicing, but the man did not gamble, not so much as pitching pennies. He and his wife Clarine, a dog trainer, saved every coin they could spare, and Petra needed small excuse to talk at length about the inn they intended to buy one day. Even more surprising, Clarine was at his side, enveloped in a dark cloak, and apparently as absorbed in the gaming as he. Petra glanced warily over his shoulder into the camp when he saw Matt and Aginan approaching arm in arm, which made Matt frown. People looking over their shoulders was never good. Clarine's plump brown face broke into a warm smile, though. Like most women in the show, she thought he and Aginan were romantic. The bent-nosed horse handler, a heavy-shouldered tyrant named Cole, leered as he scooped up the wager, a few coppers. No one but Doman could see Aginan as pretty, but to some fools, nobility bestowed beauty. Or money did. And a noblewoman must be rich. A few thought any noblewoman who abandoned her husband for the likes of Matt Cawthon might be open to leaving him, too, and bringing her money with her. That was the story Matt and the others had put around to explain why they were hiding from the Seanchan. A cruel husband and a lover's flight. Everyone had heard that sort of tale, from gleeman or books, if seldom real life, often enough to accept it. Cole kept his head down, though. Aginan, Lyowin, had already drawn her belt knife on a sword juggler, a too handsome fellow who had been overly suggestive in asking her to share a cup of wine in his wagon, and no one doubted she would have used the blade if he had pressed his suit an inch further. As soon as Matt reached the strong man, Petra said quietly, "There are Seanchan soldiers talking to Luka, about 20 of them. The officer's talking with him leastwise." He did not sound frightened, but worry creased his forehead, and he laid a protective hand on his wife's shoulder. Clarine's smile faded, and she raised one hand to rest atop his. They trusted Luca's judgment, after a fashion, yet they knew the risk they were running, or thought they did. The risk they believed in was bad enough. "What do they want?" Aginan demanded, pushing free of Matt before he could crack his teeth. In fact, no one waited for him.
"Hold these for me,"
Noel said, handing his pole and basket to the one-eyed man, who gaped up at him. Straightening, Noel slipped a knobbly hand beneath his coat, where he kept two long-bladed knives.
"Can we reach our horses?"
he asked Petra. The strong man eyed him doubtfully. Matt was not the only one unsure whether Noel still possessed all his wits.
"They don't seem interested in searching," Clarine said hastily, making a hint of a curtsy to Aginan.
Everyone was supposed to pretend Matt and the others were part of the show, but few managed to carry it off with Aginan.
"The officer's been in Luca's wagon for a good half hour, but the soldiers have been standing by their horses all that time."
"I don't think they're here about you," Petra added respectfully.
again to Aginan. Why should he be different? Probably practicing to welcome nobles to that inn. We just didn't want you to be surprised or worried seeing them. I'm sure Luca will send them off with no trouble. Despite his tone, the creases remained in his forehead. Most men became upset if their wives ran off, and a nobleman could make others bear the brunt of his ire. A traveling show, strangers just passing through, made a particularly easy target without added complications.
You don't have to worry about anybody talking out of turn, my lady.
Glancing at the horse handlers, Petra added,
Does she coal?
Bentnose shook his head, his eyes on the dice he was bouncing on his palm. He was a big man, but not as big as Petra, and the strong man could straighten horseshoes with his bare hands.
Everybody likes a chance to spit on a noble's boots now and then, the one-eyed fellow mumbled, peering into the basket of fish.
He was almost as tall and wide-shouldered as Cole, but his face was all leathery wrinkles, and he had even fewer teeth than Noel. Glancing at Aginan, he ducked his head and added,
Begging your pardon, lady. Sides, this way we all get a little coin, which there ain't been much of lately. Right, Cole? Anybody talks? Them Sean Chan'll take us all up, maybe hang us like they did them sea folk, or put us to work cleaning them canals the other side of the harbor.
Horse handlers did whatever needed doing around the show, from mucking the horse lines and cleaning animals' cages to erecting and taking down the canvas wall, but he shuddered as though digging out silted canals in the Rahad was a worse prospect than hanging.
Did I say anything about talking? Cole protested, spreading his hands. I just asked how long we're going to sit here, that's all. I just asked when we're going to see some of this coin.
We sit here as long as I say sit.
It was remarkable how hard Aginan made that drawl sound without raising her voice, like a blade sliding free of the scabbard.
You see your coin when we reach our destination. There will be a little something extra for those who serve me faithfully, and a cold grave for anyone who thinks on betrayal.
Cole pulled his much-patched cloak tight and widened his eyes, trying to look indignant, or maybe innocent. But he just appeared to be hoping she would come close enough for him to filch her purse. Matt ground his teeth. For one thing, that was his gold she was promising with such a free hand. She had her own, but not near enough for this. More importantly, she was trying to take charge again. Light. Except for him, she would still be in Abu Dhar, scheming to avoid the Seekers, if not already being put to the question. Except for him, she would never have thought of staying close to Abu Dhar to throw off pursuit, or found a hiding place with Luca's show. But why were soldiers there? The Shon Chan would have sent 100 men, 1,000, for a vague suspicion of Tuan's presence. If they suspected the Aes Sedai, no. Petra and Clarine did not know they were helping hide Aes Sedai, but they would have mentioned Suldam and Damani, and the soldiers would not be hunting sisters without them. He fingered the fox head through his coat. He wore that waking and sleeping, and it might give him a little warning. He never considered trying for the horses, and not just because Cole and a dozen more like him would go running to the Shonchan before he was well out of sight. They had no particular animosity toward him or Aginan that he knew. Even Ruman, the sword juggler, seemed to have settled in happily with a contortionist named Adria. But some folks would not resist the temptation of a little more gold either. In any case, no warning dice tumbled in his head, and there were people inside those canvas walls he could not leave behind. If they're not searching, then we have nothing to worry about, he said confidently. But thanks for the warning, Petra. I've never liked surprises. The strong man made a small gesture as if to say it was nothing, but Aginan and Clarine looked at Matt as though startled to find him there. Even Cole and the one-eyed lout blinked at him. It took an effort to stop short of gritting his teeth again.
I'll just wander near Luca's wagon and see what I can see. Lawin, you and Noel find Alvar and stay with him.
They liked the boy. Everyone did. And that would keep them out of his hair. He could eavesdrop better alone. And if they had to run, maybe Aginan and Noel could help get the boy out at least. The light sender did not come to that. He could see nothing but disaster in it.
Well, I suppose nobody lives forever,
Noel sighed, retrieving his bamboo pole and basket. Burn him, but the fellow could make a colicky goat seem cheerful. Petra's frown certainly deepened. Married men always seem to be worried, one reason Matt was in no hurry himself. As Noel vanished around the corner of the canvas wall, the one-eyed man watched the fish go regretfully. He appeared to be another without a full set of wits. He probably had a wife somewhere. Matt pulled his cap almost down to his eyes. Still no dice. He tried not to think of how many times he had nearly had his throat slit or his skull split without any dice. But surely they would have been there if there was any real danger. Of course they would. He had not taken three steps inside the entrance before Aginin caught up to him and slipped her arm around his waist. He stopped in his tracks, eyeing her balefully. She resisted his orders the way a trout fought the hook, but this went beyond stubborn. "What do you think you're doing? What if this Shonchan officer recognizes you?" That seemed as likely as Tylin herself walking into the show, but anything that might make her leave was worth grabbing.
"What are the chances this fellow is anyone I know?" she scoffed. "I don't have..." Her face twisted for an instant. "Didn't have many friends this side of the ocean, and none in Ebu Dar."
She touched an end of the black wig over her bosom.
"Anyway, in this, my own mother wouldn't recognize me."
Her voice turned bleak toward the end. He was going to chip a tooth if he kept on clenching his jaw. Standing there arguing with her would be worse than useless, but the way she had stared at those Shonchan soldiers was fresh in his mind. "Don't glare at anybody," he warned her. "Don't even look at anybody."
"I'm a demure Ebu Dare woman."
She made it sound a challenge.
"You can do all the talking."
She made that into a warning. Light. When a woman was not making everything smooth, she made things very rough indeed. And Aginin never made anything smooth. He was definitely in danger of chipping a tooth. Beyond the entrance, the show's main street meandered among wagons like those the tinkers used. Little houses on wheels, with the wagon shafts lifted against the driver's seats, and walled tents often as large as small houses. Most of the wagons were brightly painted, every shade of red or green, yellow or blue, and many of the tents were just as colorful, a few even striped. Here and there, wooden platforms where entertainers could perform stood beside the street, their colored bunting beginning to look a bit grubby. The broad expanse of dirt, near 30 paces wide and beaten flat by thousands of feet, really was a street, one of several that wound through the show. The wind whipped away faint gray streamers of smoke rising from the tin chimneys that stuck up from the roofs of the wagons and from some tents. Most of the show folk were probably at breakfast, if not still in bed. They rose late as a rule Matt approved, and no one would want to eat sitting around a cook fire outside in this cold. The only person he saw was Aludra. The sleeves of her dark green dress pushed up her forearms, grinding something with a bronze mortar and pestle on a table that folded down from the side of her vivid blue wagon, just around the corner on one of the narrower side streets. Intent on her work, the slender Tara Bonner did not see Aginin and Matt. He could not help looking at her, though. With her dark hair and thin beaded braids that hung to her waist, Aludra was probably the most exotic of Luca's marvels. He advertised her as an illuminator, and unlike many of the other performers in marvels, she really was what Luca claimed, though Luca probably did not believe it himself. Matt wondered what she was grinding, and whether it might explode. She had promised to reveal the secret of fireworks if he could answer a riddle, but he had not found a glimmer so far. He would, though, one way or another. Aginin poked a hard finger into his ribs.
"We're supposed to be lovers, as you keep reminding me," she growled. "Who's going to believe it if you stare at that woman as though you're hungry?"
Matt grinned lasciviously.
"I always look at pretty women, haven't you noticed?"
Adjusting her headscarf with a little more vigor than usual, she gave a disparaging grunt, and he was satisfied. Her prudish streak came in handy now and then. Aginin was on the run for her life, but she was still Shonchan, and she already knew more about him than he liked. He was not about to trust her with all of his secrets, even the ones he did not know yet. Luca's wagon sat in the very middle of the show's camp, the most favored position, as far as possible from the smells of the animal cages and horse lines situated along the canvas walls. The wagon was garish even compared to the others in the show, a red and blue thing that shone like the finest lacquer work, every surface spotted with golden comets and stars. The faces of the moon, in silver, ran all the way around just below the roofline. Even the tin chimney was painted in red and blue rings. A tinker would have blushed. To one side of the wagon, two ranks of helmeted Shunshan soldiers stood stiffly beside their horses, green tasseled lances slanted at exactly the same angle. One of the men held the reins of an extra mount, a fine dun gelding with strong haunches and good ankles. The soldier's blue and green armor appeared drab alongside Luca's wagon. Matt was unsurprised to see he was not the only one interested in the Shunshan. A dark stocking cap covering his shaved head, Bale Doman was squatting on his heels with his back against one wheel of the green wagon that belonged to Petra and Clarine, about 30 paces beyond the soldiers. Clarine's dogs lay under the wagon, a motley collection of smallish animals sleeping huddled together. The thick-bodied Ilianer was pretending to whittle, but all he had produced was a small pile of shavings at his feet. Matt wished the fellow would grow a mustache to hide his upper lip or else shave off the rest of his beard. Someone might connect an Ilianer to a Genin. Blarik Nagina, a tall fellow leaning against the wagon as though keeping Doman company, had not hesitated to remove his Shinaran topknot to avoid Shunshan notice, though he ran a hand over the black bristle growing on his head about as often as a Genin checked her wig. Maybe he should wear a cap. In their dark coats, with frayed cuffs and well-traveled boots, both men could pass for show folk, maybe horse handlers, except to other show folk. They were watching the Shunshan while trying to seem not to, but Blarik was the more successful, as might be expected from a warder. His full attention appeared to be on Doman, except for an occasional glance at the soldiers, as casual as could be. Doman scowled at the Shunshan when he was not glaring at the lump of wood in his hand, as though ordering it to turn into a neat carving. The man had taken being Sojin entirely too much to heart. Matt was trying to figure out how to sneak close to Luca's wagon and eavesdrop unseen by the soldiers when the door at the back of the wagon opened and a pale-haired Shunshan marched down the steps, planting a helmet with a thin blue plume on his head as his boot touched the ground. Luca appeared behind him, resplendent in scarlet embroidered with golden sunbursts, bowing with elaborate flourishes as he followed the officer. Luca owned at least 2 dozen coats, most red and each gaudier than the last. It was a good thing his wagon was the largest in the show, or he would not have had room for them all. Ignoring Luca, the Shunshan officer stepped up onto his gelding, adjusted his sword, and barked orders that sent his men flowing into their saddles and forming a column of twos that moved off at a slow walk toward the entrance. Luca stood watching them leave with a fixed smile on his face, poised for another bow if any looked back. Matt stayed well to the side of the street and let his mouth hang open, affecting to gape in wonder as the soldiers rode by. Not that any of them so much as glanced his way. The officer stared straight ahead, and so did the soldiers behind him. But no one ever paid any mind to a country yokel, or remembered one. To his surprise, Aginan studied the ground in front of her toes, clutching the scarf knotted beneath her chin until the last horseman passed. Lifting her head to look after them, she pursed her lips for a moment. "It seems I do know that boy," she drawled softly. "I carried him to Falma on Fearless. His servant died mid-voyage, and he thought he could use one of my crew. I had to put him straight. You'd have thought he was of the blood, the fuss he put up." "Blood and bloody ashes," Matt breathed. How many other people had she gotten crosswise, fixing her face in their minds? Aginan being Aginan, probably hundreds. And he had been letting her walk around with just a wig and a change of clothes for disguise. Hundreds? Thousands, more likely. She could irritate a brick. In any case, the officer was gone now. Matt exhaled slowly. His luck really was still with him. At times he thought that was all that kept him from bawling like a baby. He headed for Luca to find out what the soldiers had wanted. Doman and Blarik reached Luca as quickly as he and Aginan did, and the scowl on Doman's round face deepened as he stared at Matt's arm around Aginan's shoulder. The Ilianer understood the necessity for the pretense, or said he did, yet he seemed to believe they could carry it off without so much as touching hands. Matt removed his arm from her. There was nothing to carry off here. Luca knew the truth, of everything. And Aginan started to release him too, yet after a look at Doman, she tightened her grip on Matt's waist instead, all without the slightest change of expression. Doman continued to scowl, but at the ground now. Matt decided he would understand the Shunshan long before he understood women. Or Ilianers, for that matter.
"Horses,"
Luca growled almost before Matt stopped walking. His frown took in all of them, but he focused most of his anger on Matt, A little the taller, Lucas stretched down to stare at Matt.
That's what he wanted. I showed him the warrant exempting me from the horse lottery, signed by the High Lady Soroth herself. But was he impressed? It didn't matter to him that I rescued a high-ranking Shonchan.
The woman had not been high-ranking, and he had not so much rescued her as given her a way to travel as a hired performer. But Luca always exaggerated to his own advantage.
I don't know how long that exemption is really good for, anyway. The Shonchan are desperate for horses. They might take it back any day.
His face was turning almost as red as his coat, and he jabbed a finger at Matt repeatedly.
You're going to get my horses taken. How do I move my show with no horses? Answer me that if you can. I was ready to leave as soon as I saw that madness in the harbor, until you twisted my arm. You're going to get my head cut off. I could be 100 miles from here if not for you riding in out of the night and snaring me in your crazy schemes. I'm not earning a penny here. There haven't been enough patrons the last 3 days to pay for feeding the animals one day. Half a day. I should have left a month ago. More, I should have.
Matt almost laughed as Luca ran down into splutters. Horses. That was all. Just horses. Besides, the notion that the show's heavy-laden wagons could cover 100 miles in 5 days was as ludicrous as Luca's wagon. The man could have gone a month ago, 2 months, except for wanting to eke every copper he could out of Abu Dhar and its Shonchan conquerors. And as for talking him into staying 6 nights past, that had been as easy as falling out of bed. Instead of laughing, Matt put a hand on Luca's shoulder. The fellow was vain as a peacock and greedy besides, but there was no point making him angrier than he already was. If you'd left that night, Luca, you think nobody would have gotten suspicious? You would have had Shonchan tearing your wagons apart before you made 2 leagues. You could say I saved you from that. Luca glowered. Some people just could not see beyond their own noses. Anyway, you can stop worrying. As soon as Tom returns from the city, we can put as many miles behind us as you want. Luca leaped so suddenly that Matt stepped back in alarm, but all the man did was caper in a little circle, laughing. Doman goggled at him, and even Blerick stared. Sometimes Luca seemed a flat bull-goose fool. Luca had barely begun his dance when Aginan shoved Matt away from her. As soon as Marilyn returns, I gave orders no one was to leave. Her glare swung between him and Luca in cold fury, a cold that burned. I expect my orders to be obeyed. Luca stopped cavorting abruptly and eyed her sideways, then suddenly made her a bow with so many flourishes you could practically see the cloak. You could almost see the embroidery on the cloak. He thought he had a way with women, Luca did.
You command, my sweet lady, and I leap to obey.
Coming upright, he shrugged apologetically.
But Master Cawthon has gold, and I fear gold commands my first obedience.
Matt's chest full of gold coins in this very wagon had been all the arm-twisting needed to convince him. Maybe Matt being Tavirin had helped, but for enough gold, Valen Luca would help kidnap the Dark One. Aginan drew a deep breath, ready to berate Luca further, but the man turned his back and went scampering up the steps into his wagon, shouting,
Littell! Littell! We must roust everybody out immediately! We're leaving at last! The minute Marilyn returns, the light be praised!
A moment later he was back again, dashing back down the short stair, followed by his wife, drawing a black velvet cloak sewn with glittering spangles around herself. A stern-faced woman, she wrinkled her nose at Matt as though he had a bad smell, and gave Aginan a look that likely made her trained bears climb trees. Littell disliked the idea of a woman running away from her husband, even when she knew it was a lie. Luckily, she seemed to worship Luca for some reason, and she liked gold nearly as well as he did. Luca ran to the nearest wagon and began pounding on the door, and Littell did the same at the next. Not waiting around to watch, Matt hurried off down one of the side streets, more of an alley compared to the main street. It wound around the same sort of wagons and tents, all shut up tight against the cold, with smoke streaming from the metal chimneys. There were no platforms for performers here, but lines for drying laundry hung between some of the wagons, and here and there wooden toys lay scattered on the ground. This street was for living only, the narrowness meant to discourage outsiders. He moved quickly, despite his hip. He had walked most of the ache out, but he had not gone 10 steps before Aginan and Doman caught up to him. Blerick had vanished, probably gone to tell the sisters they were still safe and could finally leave. The Aes Sedai, masquerading as servants sick with worry that their mistress's husband would catch them, were fed up with being confined to their wagon, not to mention fed up with sharing with the Suldam. Matt had made them share, so the Aes Sedai could watch the Suldam, while the Suldam kept the Aes Sedai out of his hair. Still, Matt was glad Bleric had taken away the necessity for him to visit that wagon again. One or another of the sisters had summoned him 4 or 5 times a day since their escape from the city, and he went when he could not avoid it, but it was never a pleasant experience. Aegenin did not put her arm around him this time. She strode at his side, staring straight ahead, not bothering to check her wig for once. Doman lumbered behind like a bear, muttering under his breath in his heavy Ilianer accent. The stocking cap exposed the fact that his dark beard stopped abruptly at the middle of each ear, with only stubble above. It made him look unfinished. 2 captains on 1 ship. Make sure course for disaster, Aegenin drawled with overdone patience. Her understanding smile looked as if it hurt her face. We aren't on a ship, Matt replied. The principle's the same, Cawthon. You are a farmer. I know you're a good man in a tight spot. Aegenin shot a dark look over her shoulder at Doman. He was the one who had brought her and Matt together, back when she thought she was getting a hired man. But this situation needs judgment and experience. We're in dangerous waters, and you have no knowledge of command. More than you might think, he told her dryly.
He could have spun out a list of the battles he remembered commanding, but only an historian would recognize most of them, and maybe not even an historian. No one would believe it anyway. He certainly would not, if someone else had made that claim.
Shouldn't you and Doman be getting ready? You wouldn't want to leave anything behind. Everything she owned was already stowed away in the wagon she and Matt shared with Doman. Not a comfortable arrangement, that. But he quickened his step, hoping she would take the hint. Besides, he saw his destination ahead. The bright blue-wall tent, crowded between a virulent yellow wagon and an emerald green one, was barely large enough to hold 3 cots. But providing shelter for everyone he brought out of Ebu Dar had required bribes to make people move, and more bribes to make others let them in. What he had been able to hire was what the owners were willing to let him have, at rates suitable for a good inn. Julin, a dark, compact man with short black hair, was sitting cross-legged on the ground in front of the tent with Olver, a thin little boy, if not so skinny as when Matt first saw him, and short for 10, the age he claimed. Both coatless despite the wind, they were playing snakes and foxes on a board the boy's dead father had drawn for him on a piece of red cloth. Tossing the dice, Olver counted the pips carefully and considered his move along the spiderweb of black lines and arrows. The Tyran thief catcher was paying less attention to the game. He sat up straight at the sight of Matt. Abruptly, Noel darted around from the rear of the tent, breathing hard as if he had been running. Julin glanced up in surprise at the old man, and Matt frowned. He had told Noel to come straight here. Where had he gone instead? Noel looked at him expectantly, not with any guilt or embarrassment, just eager to hear what Matt had to say.
You know about the Shonshan? Julin asked, turning his attention to Matt, too.
A shadow moved inside the tent's entry flaps, and a dark-haired woman, seated on the end of one of the cots with an old gray cloak wrapped around her, leaned forward to rest a hand on Julin's arm, and to give Matt a wary look. Thera was pretty, if you liked a mouth that always seemed to be pouting, and it seemed that Julin did, from the way he smiled at her reassuringly and patted her hand. She was also Amathera Elfdin Casimir Luno, Panarch of Terabon, and the next thing to a queen. At least she had been once. Julin had known that, and so had Tom, yet no one thought to tell Matt until they reached the show. He supposed it hardly mattered, alongside everything else. She answered faster to Thera than to Amathera. She made no demands, except on Julin's time, and there seemed little chance anyone would recognize her here. In any case, Matt hoped she felt more than gratitude for being rescued, because Julin certainly felt more for her. Who was to say a dethroned Panarch could not fall in love with a thief catcher? Stranger things had happened, though he was not sure he could name one offhand. They just wanted to see the warrant for Luca's horses, he said, and Julin nodded, visibly relaxing a little.
As well they didn't count the horse lines.
The warrant listed the exact number of horses Luca was allowed to keep. The Shonshan could be generous with their rewards, but given their need for mounts and wagon teams, they were not about to hand anyone a license to set up horse trading. At best, they would have taken the extra. At worst, the thief catcher shrugged. Another cheerful soul. With a gasp, Thera suddenly pulled her cloak tighter and jerked back into the depths of the tent. Julin looked behind Matt, his eyes going hard, and the Tyran could match the waters when it came to hard. Aginan did not seem to catch hints, and she was glaring at the tent. Doman stood beside her with his arms folded, sucking his teeth in thought or forced patience.
"Get your tent packed up, Sandar," Aginan ordered. "The show is leaving as soon as Marilyn returns."
Her jaw tightened, and she did not quite glare at Matt. Not quite.
"Make sure your woman doesn't give any trouble."
Most lately, Thera had been a servant, Dakovale, the property of the High Lady Suroth, until Julin stole her away. To Aginan, stealing Dakovale was almost as bad as freeing Damani.
"Can I ride wind?"
Alvar exclaimed, bounding to his feet.
"Can I, Matt? Can I, Lawin?"
Aginan actually smiled at him. Matt had yet to see her smile at anyone else, even Doman.
"Not yet," Matt said.
Not until they were far enough from Ebu Dar that no one was likely to remember the Grey winning races with a small boy on his back. "In a few days, maybe. Julin, will you tell the others? Bleric already knows, so the sisters are taken care of." Julin did not waste time, aside from ducking inside the tent to reassure Thera. She seemed to need reassuring frequently. When he came out, carrying a dark Tyran coat that was beginning to show wear, he told Alvar to put the game away and help Thera with the packing until he returned, then settled his flat-topped, conical red hat on his head and started off, shrugging into the coat. He never so much as glanced at Aginan. She considered him a thief, offensive in itself to a thief-catcher, and the Tyran had no love for her either. Matt started to ask Noel where he had been, but the old man darted nimbly after Julin, calling over his shoulder that he would help let the others know the show was leaving. Well, two could spread the word faster than one. Vannon and the four surviving Red Arms shared a crowded tent on one side of the show, while Noel himself shared another with Tom and the two serving men, Lopin and Nerim, on the opposite side. And the question could wait. Probably he had just delayed to put his precious fish somewhere safe. In any case, the question suddenly seemed unimportant. The noise of people shouting for horse handlers to bring their teams, and others demanding at the top of their lungs to know what was happening, was beginning to fill the camp. Adria, a slim woman holding a flowered green robe around her, came running up in bare feet and vanished into the yellow wagon where the other four contortionists lived. Somebody in the green wagon bellowed hoarsely that people were trying to sleep. A handful of performers' children, some performers themselves, dashed by, and Alvar looked up from folding the game. That was his most prized possession. But if not for that, he plainly would have gone after them. It was going to take some time yet before the show was ready to travel, but that was not what made Matt groan. He had just heard those bloody dice start rattling in his head again.